God aften og velkommen til Radio Shalom. Vi sender på 87,6 MHz på FM-båndet og på http://radioshalom.dk. Jeres vært og tekniker denne aften, Alexander Milchtakslav.
Paulinmuseet i Warszawa, eller Museum for de polske jøders historie, er foruden dets imponerende permanente udstilling. For imponerende den er, uanset om man mener, at den forskynder det polske jødiske samliv igennem århundreder, er også kendt for sine midlertidige udstillinger, som årligt tiltrækker flere hundrede tusinder besøgende fra ind- og udland. Jeg har her på kanalen bragt flere udsendelser fra de midlertidige udstillinger på Paulinmuseet. For eksempel handlede udstillingen og programmet sidste år om jødisk madlavning, og i 2019 om paralleller mellem den nybyggede polske havneby Gdynia og den også nybyggede Tel Aviv. Den midlertidige udstilling i år handler ikke overraskende om opstanden i Warszawas ghetto. Det er nemlig i år, at der blev fejret 80. årsdag for opstanden, som startede den 19. april 1943. Den håbløse opstand handlede ikke om at vende mod den tyske overmagt, men om at dø med ære i behold. At dø med ære var et leitmotiv, der gik igennem alle de gange, man holdt mindeceremonier for de jødiske modstandsfolk og deres militære organisationer i Warszawas ghetto. Fuldstændig som om alle de andre ca. 350.000 jøder, som ikke greb til våben, døde underforstået uden ære. Og det er netop denne paradigmeskift i opfattelsen af ghettoens civile ofre, og civile siger jeg her i godseøjne, som museets mindemarkering af udslettelsen af Warszawas ghetto forsøger at åbne med dette års midlertidige udstilling. Udstillingen hedder på engelsk Around Us a Sea of Fire, eller på dansk Omkring os et hav af flammer, og handler om de civile jøder i ghettoen, om deres modstand, om deres kamp for overlevelse, om deres lidelser og om at dø med ære. De var ca. 50.000 tilbage i ghettoen i Warszawa på dagen, hvor jøderne skulle fra at sætte, og på dagen, hvor opstanden brød ud, fordi tyskerne omringede ghettoen i et forsøg på at samle indbyggerne og jage dem alle til Umschlagplatz og sende i kreaturvogne til udryddelseslejren Treblinka. Kampene varede 3-4 dage, hvorefter ledelsen af de jødiske modstandsfolk uden mere våben og ammunition forskansede sig i deres bunker på Milagade nummer 18. De fleste begik selvmord, da tyskerne opdagede den sidste hemmelige indgang til deres bunker. Det tog tyskerne og deres litauiske, lettiske og ukrainske hjælpetropper en måned at tømme ghettoen for mennesker, der skjulte sig i underjordiske bunker og kældre. Det gjorde de ved systematisk at brænde ejendom for ejendom i hver eneste gade i ghettoen, for derved at tvinge folk til at komme ud af deres skjul i brændende huse. Derfor titlen på udstillingen Omkring os et hav af flammer. Men det er også et citat. Citatet stammer fra en dagbogsoptagelse fra en af de 17 jødiske civile i ghettoen, der nedfældede deres oplevelser i dag- eller notesbøger. Citater, som udstillingen bruger til at illustrere, hvordan deres liv under opstanden så ud. Nogle få af de citerede vidner overlevede, efter de andre er der kun deres dagbøger tilbage. Tusinder af dem, der blev tvunget ud af de brændende huse, blev skudt og dræbt på stedet, og alle de andre blev sendt til udryddelseslejre. Polymuseet har igen stillet en engelsk talende guide til rådighed for mig. Guiden hedder Kasia Jankowska, og hun vil føre os igennem udstillingen. Udstillingen åbnede den 18. april og varer til den 8. januar 2024. Den er meget anbefalelsesværdig.
Hello again, Kasia. Welcome to Radio Shalom. I know you've been with us before, but anyway, I would like to begin with that you introduce yourself just shortly, and then right away you will guide us through this exhibition.
Hello, everyone. Welcome again here at the Pauline Museum with our temporary exhibit, Aranda Sea of Fire. I'm Kasia Jankowska, museum guide and educator. And today I will tell you a little bit more about our new exhibit, which was open April 17 due to the 8th anniversary of the ghetto uprising, and it's very special because for the very, very first time you will hear and witness the stories and reflections of the Jewish civilians who were in shelters, in bunkers during the ghetto uprising exactly 80 years ago here, Muranov district today.
Okay, the exhibition is as you mentioned, is about 80th anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, and it is the title is A Sea of Fire Around Us. Will you explain where this title comes from?
Actually, it's a testimony from our storyteller. We have 17 storytellers here at the core exhibit, so at the temporary exhibit, so you can follow their voices. And one of them said that while the ghetto was burning, was in flames, he actually described the situation in his diary. Well, around us, sea of fire. So those flames from the burning ghetto were like a huge sea of fire. And also, as you visit one of our installation here at this temporary exhibit, one of the shelter, you will also witness that atmosphere of the burning ghetto. So I will also explain very shortly as we go through the exhibit.
Okay, before we proceed to the exhibit itself, will you tell something more about the ghetto uprising itself? Because a sea of fire, we do understand that somebody was burning something, but it would be good to know what was happening actually in the ghetto.
So back to 8 years ago, April 19 was actually very, very first armed Jewish resistance in occupied Europe. Actually, you can say that the Jewish uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto was the very, very first over there. So before April 19, the Nazis started to surround the area of the ghetto by the cars. So already like in 16th or 17th of April or 18, the Jews heard noises and they saw that the Nazis are approaching the area of the ghetto. They are closer and closer and closer. So basically, they've already knew that something is going to happen. Also, like a preludium to that, April uprising was so-called January action, which did happen on January 18, 1943. So like a few months before April uprising. So for the very, very first time, Nazis enter the ghetto in order to liquidate it for real, the final liquidation. In January, but at the time they've met with armed resistance and they left the area of the ghetto. Actually, the Nazis were taken by a huge surprise. They didn't expect the Jews to actually fight back with a little weapon, but still with a weapon. So actually that January action was kind of like a speeding to the uprising, which did happen April 19. So for the third time, the Nazis enter the ghetto April 19, 1943. And at that time, the Jews were preparing themselves for a holiday, Passover. That was on the eve of Passover. So people in the ghetto were basically busy with preparations, with Seder dinner. Also, those who were outside of the ghetto, and they were able to enter the ghetto to reunite with the family which was in the ghetto, they did it. So yeah, that was the background. So meanwhile, non-Jews, Catholics, were preparing themselves for Catholic Easter, which were like week after Jewish Passover. So the Jews started to describe this situation as like on the eve of Passover, the Nazis are entering the ghetto and they are going to liquidate it for real. So usually the Nazis would choose those days on purpose, because the liquidations or so-called actions in the ghetto, they did happen during the Jewish holidays as well. So also, as you visit our exhibit, you will enter the room, Passover room, when you can get the background of that situation, how the Jews described those preparations to pass over, and how they felt as they've heard the Nazis' cars which were surrounding the ghetto.
Og her er det så, at Kasia fører mig ind i det første rum, hvor udstillingen begynder. Det er en lang gang, som ender med en væg, hvorpå der hænger et kæmpestort billede af et øje, kun selve øjet, uden øjenbryn eller øjenlåg. Hele den venstre væg af gangen i hele sin længde og højde er malet blank sort. Rundt om på væggen er der placeret nogle stærkt røde fotografier. De er originale sort-hvide fotografier af brændende huse i Warszawas ghetto, som er blevet photoshoppet så flammende og røde. Den højre væg i rummet er i hele sin længde og højde malet blank sølv. Væggen er en symbolsk fremstilling af, hvordan de civile jøder og civile polakker adskilt af ghettomuren så hinanden under opstanden. Jøder ser en kølig reaktion på den polske side af muren, møder modvillighed eller ligegyldighed fra polakkernes side. Polakker siger derimod på den brændende ghetto, brændende mennesker og mennesker, som hopper ud af vinduer fra brændende huse. De observerer den tykke sorte røg over bydelen, konstaterer jøderne brænder og fortsætter med deres gøremål. Forbereder at holde påsk med familie og venner, eller for underholdningens skyld at tage en tur på karusellen. Der var to karuseller placeret klods op ad ghettomuren og som stak ud over muren. En glad tur på karusellen gav et godt udsyn over den brændende ghetto, om man ville se det eller ej.
So as you are going through that room, Passover, you're immediately here, this corridor. Just please have a look over there. We have two sides. So on the left-hand side, those black spots, yes? And the title, The Ghetto Has Risen. And this is like as if we were inside of the house, burning house in the ghetto. And from the pots, they are like windows. From the windows, you can see what? Other houses which are on flames, which are burning. And just have a look at the color. So we start from the orange to the very, very red. So as the uprising goes, you can also see that on a color over there. So the ghetto has risen, everything is on flames. So just have a look at the quotation of Marilka, one of our storyteller. So quotations are extremely precious, because this is an expression from the civilians. Usually we present or you read stories or perspective of the fighters. Over there you have civilians, yes? And it's also precious because it was written at that very moment. So it's not like a post-war testimony, but straight from the ghetto times, from the uprising times. So Marilka wrote, yes, the ghetto has risen. Few hundred men armed only with revolvers. So the ammunition was pretty poor, as you can see, yes? They are here to defend the remnants of the human honor. So very touching quotation by Marilka. But on the other side, this is so-called the Aryan side. So the area which was outside of the ghetto, Warsaw outside of the ghetto. Just have a look at the colors. Over there is a silver color. So like very cold. Over there we had warm colors, hot colors. So the ghetto is burning. But this cold color symbolizes a cold eye, What do I mean? Well, how the Polish bystanders reacted to the Jewish uprising and the Jewish fate. Just have a look at this quotation, which is, well, very, very hard to acknowledge, actually, yes? Oh, the Jews are burning them there in the ghetto, yes? Then they are jumping from the houses. So this bystander perspective is presented by several unique photos, and they are presented for the very, very first time ever here at this core exhibit. So just have a look at this photo, which was taken by Bogdan Wójcik and Wójcik family. Polish, Catholic, it's a little bit weak, like after the Jewish uprising. So during the Easter breakfast, they saw this view from the window. And what they saw actually... flames, like a smog, but this is not a regular smog, but this is the burning ghetto. And this is also quite a special perspective because it was taken from the house, which was located on Żoliborz district, so north part of Warsaw. Usually you have photos taken by the Polish bystanders from the south, not from the north. So that's why it's also unique, unique photo. Just also please have a look at the those four photos which were actually found at the beginning of this year, the beginning of 2023. Yeah, photos of Rudolf Damets. Actually, thanks to his granddaughter, we know a little bit more about them. The granddaughter started to do some research over genealogy and family stories and classical stories, mysterious or mystery shoebox, and inside she found several negatives. And then she gave those negatives to specialists, and it turned out that certain parts of the negatives and those photos are actually photos from the ghetto, outside of the ghetto. Yes, yes, exactly. Especially if you take a look at this photo, which is for me very dramatic, and it's like a nutshell of the reaction of the bystanders. Because what do we have? Okay, on the horizon, some buildings and the mist, but this is not just the mist. As we know, this is a ghetto smog. Yeah, and you can see the ghetto wall also on the horizon. People are just passing by. Some of them are looking at, but please have a look at that, this lady. We can see only her back. We cannot see her reaction. We don't know about her face. Whether she's saying the Jews are burning, maybe smiling, or maybe crying. But these are those reactions from...
She's standing and looking. She's observing.
She's observing, yeah, she's observing. So it's, for me, as I've mentioned, like a natural of their reactions, how non-Jews, how Poles reacted to that. And famous, infamous, carousel over Krasiński Square. But this carousel was not at Krasiński Square, it was Bonifraterska Street, so next to the new town area of the old town, and it was not functioning. But actually this carousel became another symbol of those reactions, yes? So why the carousel next to the ghetto? So people were supposed to have fun using this carousel, yeah? But just few meters from this carousel, people were dying, were burning. And if you have a look at Szymon Glicksman's testimony, yes? The Warsaw is full of dust all night, at night, the burning ghetto, bloodshot eye gazes towards the city. And actually, we do have this eye, this blood eye, just at the end of this corridor, which is an artistic work by Joanna Rajkowska, who's famous from the Palm Tree, which is in Warsaw. That's the artist. And this eye is very special because the eye looks at us, or maybe it's the eye from the ghetto or a bystander eye. From the other side also the eye looks at the memorial to the ghetto fighters. And now I will tell you that the eye is actually Hena Kutter's eye, and today Hena Kutter is Krystyna Budnicka. So the last living Jewish civilian. She's 921 and survivor. She was 11 during the uprising, and she was hiding with her family in a shelter here in the area of the former ghetto. So that's why this work is extremely important and very, very touching. Just also over there, have a look at this negative. So this is basically what Polish bystander saw. So the view wasn't actually new for them, yes? They got used to that, yes? Because it lasted several days and they saw huge flames just over the north part of the city, which was the area of the ghetto. So Borowczyk, Zbigniew Borowczyk, negative. And how people reacted also, if you take a look at this testimony, yes? So majority responded to the fighting in the ghettos as if they were responding to a struggle of a far away. So it's like, it's not my story. It's not my story. I'm outside. It's only like 100 meters from me, but it's like the other story.
Who are the people that are quoted here on this Aryan side of the wall?
So we have quotations from Polish bystanders and also the Jews who were living on the so-called Aryan documents and Aryan documents exactly inside. And also from the perspective of the fights, yes. So photos which were taken outside of the ghetto, but you can find the German cannon also next to the ghetto wall. And if you take a look at these dramatic photos, so the houses are burning. That was a regular house from the Jewish quarter. Now it's full of fire. And if you turn around, you will see that our installation, yes, the ghetto has risen. So those spaces, which are like windows, and you can observe from the inside of the house, from the window, and neighboring houses, which are burning. And if we go over there, that's famous, infamous carousel from Krasiński Square, which became an inspiration for a poem, Campo di Fiori, by Polish author Czesław Miłosz, who described the reaction of the Polish bystanders. So this is that carousel. And you can see that it's working, yes? This is even a swing. The carousel is here, and over there we have a swing for the kids, and also the lady, she watches, she's looking at. And Henryk Rudnicki, once again, he said, yeah, I went out to the city center, look at the burning ghetto, look at the burning ghetto, yes? At first thing what caught him was what? Those carousels which were full of people. They were looking at with curiosity, but still looking at. And another storyteller of our exhibit, Maur, or H, this is what we have, this is what's left from him, this is his identity, H or surname or name Maur. We have buried ourselves underground. We have hidden I'm the walls. All we have left now is the life itself. So life in hiding, in shelters, in hideouts, or those places. But those shelters, hideouts, are like tombs. So let's enter that section.
Og hermed forlader vi den lange gang og kommer ind i en anden gang. Den er ikke så lang, lidt mørk, lysende dæmpet i væggene i ro. Der er 7 små lokaler på begge sider af gangen. Disse lokaler symboliserer de kældre og bunkere, som jøder i en forventning om en kommende deportation fra ghettoen har indrettet sig og udstyret som skjulesteder. Målet og forhåbningen var at undgå deportation, hvis de forblev i skjul. Hvert rum præsenterer et særligt aspekt af livet i skjul af de mennesker, der var støvet sammen i rummet, deres følelser, angst og håb.
When did the Jews start to dig themselves in to build the shelters and bunkers? When did it start all?
So if you talk about the civilians, already 1942, so during the Great Deportation Action, so the first liquidation of the Warsaw Ghetto, so between July and September, the Nazis started to deport Warsaw Jews to Treblinka extermination site. So as the first accounts about so-called resettlement to the east came to the ghetto, the civilians already actually knew that resettlement to the east meant deportation, so they started to create shelters. It was extremely, extremely hard task, because what do you need? You need money, you need also skills, architecture, yes, to build such a shelter and how to organize life, but also to provide a whole infrastructure like water, toilets, yes, and food as well.
And to keep it secret that nobody knows.
Keep it secret, exactly, yeah. So shall we enter that area? So as you cross, as you pass to the third room at the core exhibit, you may get an impression of cellars, of the bunkers, of the shelters. So we have several spots, as you can see, and every single bunker has its title, the sound of cannons, yes, so the beginning of the uprising, how it was described by the civilians from the very, very beginning of the fights, then we are just a step away from the death. So emotions, because usually historians or exhibitions, they do not touch the topic of how people felt, how the civilians felt, what were the relations of the people inside of those hideouts. So also we do talk about it, yes, and very often, usually those emotions are very, very difficult, very tough.
We are here in a corridor with seven different compartments, bunkers, one could say, where Jews could have been hiding. And every one of them represents a different type of feeling, emotion that, mm-hmm. that people experienced while hiding in those places. And the emotions is like...
Fear,
yes. One step away from death, with people expecting a death, you know, the child spells doom for us, which is to say that when if people had children, hidden together with or giving the birth. It was very imperative to stay quiet, and it was difficult to keep children quiet or to keep a newborn quiet.
But also hunger. People were basically hungry yes. As well. Also miscommunication. Sometimes it happened that the Jews who spoke Yiddish, they were in the same room, the same hideout, as the Jews who spoke only Polish. So how to communicate, yes? Mm-hmm. Miscommunication. And basically apathy as well, because you do not have food, you do not have daylight. So you have to change your habits as well and change your life. Just let's enter this room. So I will show you an extremely touching quotation, memoir, from Krystyna Budnicka, the last of Kutcher family, our storyteller, the survivor, yeah. What she said, this is her expression, this is how she felt as she was 11. I was as if beyond reality, yes? Lethargic, if you will. I didn't even feel afraid. But also, yes, sound of whisper. We are afraid of even like whispering as well. And they become... A night is a day for us. What does it mean? Of course, if you are packed and inside of this small shelter hideout, you need daylight, yes? You need fresh air. So when can you get out? During the night, when the Nazis are not surrendering the area, but also when you do not expect Polish betrayals as well. So during the regular day, the Jews from the shelters, they were sleeping. They had night. During the night, they could go outside and get some fresh air. So that's also the expression and what our storyteller so remember how they describe that. Also, usually those places were designed for like 11 or 12 people, but they were packed with 25. So it was like overcrowded, mm-hmm. overpopulated. And if you add those tough emotions like fear, you're hungry, you have to change your habits, you cannot talk, you cannot have conversation or be understood with people, yes? Mm-hmm. Because you have different languages. Yes. So These are like so classical emotions.
Creating very difficult tensions between people as well inside, that even though they were under external threat, that the threat was also coming from within as well.
Exactly. This is also what you can get from the memoirs of our storytellers. What also do we have? Is the story of Leon Nyberg, who was one of the character. Just after the war, he left a little sketch of the shelter of the bunkers from Świętojerska Street in the Warsaw Ghetto. So just have a look at this plan. So we have several rooms, like cellars, and it's like corresponding this space. Yeah. So that's Leon Nyberg, but also you have different shelter, and that's the perspective of the anonymous author, a female author, and she left a diary until today, only like several pages, 11, 12 pages left, and this is that testimony. So this is what's left from actually person, yes? 11 pages. Small description and the plan of the shelter.
Which is to say, I mean, just to go back to the beginning, because I forgot to ask you about it. The 17 people that are delivering the testimonies, there is only one of them who survived. And all of the testimonies you have, there were their diaries that were found after the war, during the war, or somehow retrieved.
So not only one survived, not only one. One is still alive. One is still alive because she was the youngest. She was 11. But our characters were on their 20s. The oldest one was 34. Because actually the Jewish fighters from the ghetto, they were actually teenagers. They were 17, 18, 20 something. So from today's perspective, teenagers, yes, teenagers. So not only one survived, but several from our storytellers as well. But also we do have those stories that we don't know how they finished, whether person was executed or killed in a camp, because the story is like broken.
We don't know their fates.
We don't know their fates, exactly. So from this bunker, from this shelter, we will go to the last one, Around a Sea of Fire bunker, and also the title of our exhibit. Please have a look at the quotation of Mietek Pachter. So this is what you've already seen by the photo, yes? So I'm not able to do anything. These people started to jump from the fifth floor to the ground. Mothers were jumping down together with their children because the ghetto was surrounded by the fire. And look at this spot, it's full of red color. So the last bunker shows you how bloody Nazi plan was, how non-humanistic it was, because the Nazis started to set fire to the house. Why? To make people come up from the shelters, because the Nazis knew that the civilians would hide in cellars underground as well. So that's why they decided to set fire, to make them come out from the hideouts. And it wasn't possible actually to be here. Just have a look. The Germans set fire to one house after another, Wasasz Menes said. But also, it was so hot. I wanted to use a tap water, and it was a hot water from this tap, not because of this infrastructure, but because of the flames just over there.
Igen er midt af disse kædre, kommer vi ud i et stort åbent rum. Det første, vi siger, er et stort fotostat af tyske soldater. Det er en original tysk fotografi, der er forstørret til mere end menneskestørrelse. Det viser sig, at en af soldaterne på fotografien er den tyske general Jürgen Strop, befalingsmanden, der knuste opstanden og udslettede brændte Warszawas ghetto til grunden. Han dræbte på stedet eller lod deportere ghettoens resterende jøder, og som en symbolsk afslutning på den vellykkede operation, befalede han at nedbrænde Warszawas smukke store synagoge, Europas næststørste. Når jeg kommer ud i rummet og ser mig omkring, opdager jeg, at alle vægge omkring i rummet er fotostater og husfacader. Jeg bliver klar over, at jeg befinder mig på en gade i ghettoen og ser det samme, eller snarere tilnærmelsesvis det samme, som ghettoens jøder måtte se, da de tvunget ud af deres skjulesteder af brand, gas og granater, kravlede op fra deres kældre på gadeplan.
And as we are leaving this burned bunker, we are outside of the hideouts, and just in front of us you will find the Nazis and the main leader, Jürgen Strop, so the main liquidator of the Warsaw Ghetto. So this photo comes also from Strop report. So that's a propaganda, Nazi propaganda photo. So over there is enlarged also on the purpose. So as you are leaving this area, you see the Nazis. But if we turn around, as you remember, we just left this around a sea of fire room burning. And from this perspective, we have burning houses. This is a house.
We should say to explain on the outside wall of the burning bunker, we see the big photos of the burning houses.
The facades, yes. Facades. We were inside of those houses, and now we can see the facades. And over on the horizon, people are marching. Yes. They are marching where? To Umschlagplatz. So once again, the most terrifying place in the Warsaw Ghetto was used. So Leon Nyberg, he actually described that, yes? I saw people who were led towards Umschlagplatz once again. Probably also, maybe several of them, they went for the third time on Umschlagplatz, because already in 1942, yes, the liquidation did happen. Maybe at that time they were taken out, they were hiding, and then again, they are led to Umschlagplatz.
You need to explain what Umschlagplatz is.
Of course. So to translate from German, Umschlagplatz, so-called reloading spot, but Umschlagplatz in Warsaw, it was the place on Stawki Street from where the Nazis deported Warsaw Jews to Treblinka extermination site located 100 kilometers northeast from Warsaw. And Zbigniew Leszek-Grzywaczewski, who was a firefighter, he captured that. So once again,
Polish firefighter,
yeah. So he was outside of the ghetto, but due to his job, he was able to get in to the ghetto, and he smuggled a camera. And he captured that moment. So the Jews...
People being led to Umschlagplatz.
Exactly. And this is a very precious testimony, visual testimony, because usually you have perspective comes from the photos of the Nazis, the propaganda photos, yes? Taken by the Nazis on purpose to spread the propaganda. We do not have photos taken by the Jews, so we do not have the Jewish perspective. So the Polish bystander, firefighter perspective is also very, very unique for us, yes? Because they are not a propaganda photos. They were taken basically to capture that moment for the future generations. And another dramatic photo taken by Grzywaczewski. And look how much he was risking his life. He was just very close to another man. Of course, this photo is not perfect. I mean, it's disturbed by the people. Probably professional photographers, they would reject it. But why so precious? Because it was taken not by the Nazis. And you can see how Nazis are putting the fire. And Grzywaczewski was just like next to, just like one meter, not even 1 meter, next to another person, yes? And what is also dramatic, he described, he wrote, he left a message on the other side of this photo, because this is the back side of the photo. And just have a look at this part. Yes, so they are over there. They couldn't escape. The Jews couldn't escape. We couldn't provide them any help despite having technical possibility. So it's also another like milestone or perspective for us to talk about the reaction of the Polish bystander. So it gives you
firefighters. I mean, that he's talking about technical possibilities. Firefighters, they have, you know, ladders, whatever. They could have gone up and had the people out of the houses, but they were not allowed to do this.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And another testimony. Yes. people were taken out from the bunkers, from the shelters, hideouts. They were led to Umschlagplatz, so the spot of Umschlagplatz, and then taken to so-called Gęsiówka, which was a concentration camp in the middle of the ghetto, actually on the spot of our museum. Gęsiówka because Anielewicz Street, so our address before World War II and during the ghetto was Gęsia, Goose Street, so that's why Gęsiówka. So the Nazis established a concentration camp, which was like a branch of Majdanek camp. So Gęsiówka was a branch of Majdanek, and the Nazis put in Gęsiówka European Jews, the Jews from Hungary, the Jews from Greece, and the European Jews of Gęsiówka prisoners, they were here basically to clean up the area from the corpses and the ghetto, like the members of Sonderkommando from the extermination sites. And why European Jews? Because they had different language than Polish Jews. So Greek Jews, Hungarian Jews, they couldn't have the same language, they couldn't communicate with Polish Jews. So also on purpose, yes? Okay. Because on the other way, they could
unite in any type of resistance.
Exactly. So if you take a look at this huge photo, that's the address, pre-war address, Zamenhofa 19. Today, this building in ruins, this is actually the spot of our museum. This is the spot of our museum, so this is the courtyard. And in the middle of this courtyard, we have a so-called Well of the Memory. Please have a look at this installation. A rubble of the Warsaw Ghetto and regular items like the decoration of the balcony, tiles, brick, barbed wire.
Dig up from the ground, yes?
Exactly.
The museum was being built.
Exactly. So even before, in 1998, there were some archaeological excavation taken place. And this is what was found. And at the Pauline Museum, we have a huge collection of that. So this is a real testimony, authentic testimony, silent witnesses of those stories, because those items, they belong to regular people, to the civilians, yes? So tiles, barbed wire from the ghetto, of course, and everything was found exactly here. I guess also plumber pipe as well. And I will show you another photo here, also taken by that firefighter, Grzywaczewski. And this is the photo from which is our poster, yes? So this is basically a photo on what we have part of former Nalewki Street, which was one of the most important and the most famous Jewish street before World War II, next to Cobblestone Port and the tram tracks, Krasiński Garden in Warsaw, and the houses, the burning houses. So also you have this perspective, which was taken not by the Nazis, but by the firefighter. And this is exactly the spot where the uprising, the Jewish uprising started. Because actually from here, the Nazis enter the ghetto. And yes, a sea of flames just all around this courtyard. Approximately 50,000 of the civilians were here in the remnants of the Warsaw Ghetto during the uprising, and 1,000 of the fighters. And actually, uprising and the fight itself, they lasted just several days, 4-5 days. After that, the Nazis started to liquidate, final liquidation, so and burning the houses, house after house. So you will see only ruins from the Warsaw Ghetto, and people were like shadows. Shadows are passing by. So also this apathy, living in this letter, I'm like a shadow, yeah? And if you follow this timeline, so we provide how the story developed after April 19. So May 1943, Germans, they have discovered the bunker on Miła 18, the place which was the headquarters of the Jewish fighting organization and the main leaders of the resistance. So also they actually put gas from the entrances. Over there, the Nazis, they knew about 5 entrances. They didn't know about the 6th one. So one group of the fighters was able to escape the ghetto. So we are actually, the museum is actually 5 minutes from Miła, from that site, from that memorial site. So in the middle of Muranów district, which is part of the city center, you have mass grave of the Jewish resistance, of the members of the Jewish resistance. And the last day of the, let's say, of the Jewish uprising, but as we said, the regular fights, they lasted pretty short. The last day, symbolical day, May 16, 1943. So when Jürgen Straub blew up the Great Synagogue, which was a symbol of Jewish Warsaw, it was one of the most beautiful building in pre-war Warsaw. Today, a blue skyscraper, blue tower, stands on that spot, exactly. And there are also so-called rabblers, or so-called rabble people, are those shadows. So just few groups of them from the Jewish resistance who are now living in hiding between
in the rubbles,
in the rubbles, yes. Area. So as you follow this timeline, you can see how people felt at the certain point, certain month. Yes, May, June, till the end of 1943, so December 1943. But also, all around us, another precious discoveries. But also, we called them so-called distractions of the Warsaw Ghetto. Keys, very symbolical. Look at them.
Door keys.
Door key, several of them. So each key belongs to one house. So the key symbolizes families. At the end of this showcase, you have a surname, yes, a plaque with a door plaque with a surname. So as we enter the house, there is a table, on the table plates. Please just have a look at them. They are like burnt metal plates, burnt, yeah. And this one is also special because please have a look at the decoration.
It's painted. It was painted, yeah.
But what kind of the decoration?
It's for kids, isn't it?
So that's the kids.
Yes,
that's
the kids' plates, yes.
That's the kids' plates, exactly. Parts of the glasses.
Broken glasses of spectacles, yes.
Or part from the watch. So this is...
Watch face, yes.
So this is what's left basically from our storytellers and people. And not much. So as you can see, yes, they are just few traces, material traces of the Warsaw Ghetto. So the task for the curators was how to show, how to present this absence, this void, when you do not have those traces, yes? But we do have some very special traces. We call this room a treasury spot. Those showcases, 5 showcases, very unique album, photo album, original photos of occupied Warsaw, because actually the photographer Baranowski, Stanisław Baranowski, was a photographer, so he captured the beginning of the Nazi occupation of the city. But among those photos you can also find 1943 and burning ghetto. If you remember, we saw enlarged negative, and this is the original, yeah, that's the original negative of Zbigniew Borowczyk. So I was very surprised to find out that it was so small, because I was familiar with the enlarged photo, which is also part of our permanent exhibit. And you've already know this storyteller, that's our Marylka. That's our lady, actually teenager, she was 20-something. And this is what we have, Marylka, because there is a text, Marylka, so that's why we think that her name was Marylka. And very special diary, because she started to write between actually great liquidation action. So we have the beginning of the first resettlement, yes, summer of 1942. And then she started from 1st of April, so also she described the beginning of the Jewish uprising. And it's very unique because that's the original journal diary, and it's actually part of the collection of Majdanek Museum. And Majdanek Museum, for the very, very first time, agreed to present it at the exhibit. So they allowed to take the, they agreed to take the diary from their archives and present it. So we are very like proud of that and extremely happy that we have this.
Is this the same that Marika was taken to Majdanek and that she died probably in Majdanek?
Yes.
Her notebook just survived.
Her notebook just survived, exactly. So after the Ghetto Uprising, Polish Jews, they were taken to Umschlagplatz, from Umschlagplatz to Majdanek in 1943, or labor camps in area of Lublin, Lubelszczyzna, so Poniatowa and Trawniki as well. We don't know how exactly she died, whether in Majdanek or maybe because she was sick, because there is one testimony of a nurse from Majdanek that Marylka died because she was actually sick. And you've already seen that photo, which was enlarged. So the Polish family, which was preparing for having Easter breakfast. And that's the original size of the photo. So that's part of our treasury. And once again, original photos and negative of Rudolf Damet as well. So this unique perspective of the bystander. Damet actually came to Warsaw during the war, during the occupation. The family was from Gdynia, but in Warsaw he got a job in a factory of negatives in Grochów district. So that's why he had the access to negatives, yes? And once again, Grzywaczewski, so original negative and those two photos showing us the liquidation and the burning. And the burning ghetto. As you are coming to this exhibit, you can also see enlarged photos of negatives, of those original negatives. We knew about them, but what was special, what is special, and what was new for us, the sequences of the photos from the negative. It was unknown, actually. And as you look at them, you know that Grzywaczewski sneaked to the ghetto several times. He wasn't this only once, but few times. So over there you have Grzywaczewski's and Rudolf Damet's negative. Probably our listeners are wondering more or less how many people survived. Of course, I cannot provide certain or like exact data. We do not have them. But the last Jews of the war, so they were taken to Majdanek, as you can see, around 19,000. Then over 6,000 were killed in a spot as well. And this is the most dramatic part of the end, actually, of the story. Operation Harvest. So November 1943, the last Jews from the Warsaw Ghetto, and not only they were just executed. A nickname, yes, Operation Harvest, because harvest is like festival in Poland, in Poland for the harvest, yes, in summer, yes. And if you take a look at the Polish name and the Polish translation of this operation, so harvest in Polish is dożynki, but if you put different translation, dożynki,
slaughtering, cutting down.
Exactly. Yes. So it's another meaning, yes, of it. And this panoramic photo, so this is what's left from the area of the Warsaw Ghetto, just the ocean of the ruins of the rubble and the building from Zamenhof 19 Street. So today, entrance to the Pauline Museum, and this part of the Pauline Museum. So if you use your imagination, we are actually standing on a spot of the memorial to the Jewish fighters, and we are looking
at the main entrance. Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But we have this panoramic photo of the ghetto in ruins.
Og vi nærmer os afslutningen af udstillingen, og næst det sidste vi kan se er et portrætgalleri af de 17 personer, hvis iagttagelser, tanker og følelser har været brugt til at illustrere de civile jødes liv og situation under opstanden i ghettoen. Det er ikke alle, som vi ser portrætfoto af, og det er ikke alle, vi ved, hvem de var, hvad de hed, om de døde eller om de overlevede, og vi så, hvordan de levede efter krigen. De har alle det til fælles, at de fandt overskud til at nedfælde deres vidnesbyrd på papir, som dagbøger og noter, som på mirakuløs vis blev bevaret til eftertiden. Historiske vidnesbyrd til skræk og advarsel.
So probably you're wondering what was the fate and post-war story of our storytellers. They were quotations of Stella Stefania Fidelzeit, who was hiding in a shelter with people who spoke only Yiddish. She knew only Polish. She gave birth to a kid. She couldn't feed the kid, so the kid died after three days. In the ghetto, she was the biologist working in a Jewish hospital in the ghetto. After the war, she moved to Łódź, city of Łódź, where she joined a school of film. So this is her ID from film school. And then with her second family, so second husband, they left to Israel, from Israel to Sao Paulo. And her daughter was here during the opening of this exhibit, Annette. So Annette wrote memoirs about her mother, yes. And this is our Marilka, but we do not have photo. We do not have photo. Over there you will see several light boxes, because our storytellers, they didn't leave any photo, yeah?
America's surname, and here is a person that's totally anonymous.
Who left those pages with the plan of the banker, exactly. And Leon Nyberg, who was actually, let's say, the longest living civilian in the ruins of the Warsaw Ghetto. Also, he joined partisans as well. This is a very touching photo because he's in front of the memorial to the Jewish fighters. And look, after the war, he has 11 great-grandchildren. So the Nazi plan was to exterminate the Jews, but he has offsprings, yes? 11 great-grandchildren. So you can, of course, follow each of our storyteller characters. This is also a regular story, like Simcha Binem Motyl, who had a daughter, Lideczka, but unfortunately she didn't survive, and during the ghetto they were taken to France as well. His family perished in the ghetto, so they were in Bergen-Belsen camp, where he survived till the liberation. He was also a Jewish policeman in the ghetto, and after the war he had a son, Pierre, born in 1947 in Belgium. But very often, actually, Polish Jews, they would never ever talk about pre-war family or the kids, first kids, yes, born. So usually the second or third children, they didn't know that they had siblings, older siblings. So also family, parents, they kept it secret. And the last character over there, the last from the culture, Krystyna Budnicka, so the youngest, still living. She's now, as I've mentioned, 91, and she's living in Warsaw. Actually, in Warsaw, in the place where was the ghetto. So it's like very touching. So she was from the Hasidic family. She was the youngest in her family. She had a lot of siblings, actually, but two of them were betrayed, as you can see. Some Poles were searching for the so-called treasures or gold. They saw two people coming out from the shelters, from the ruins. They've promised Krystyna Budnicka's brothers extra food. They came out for the next day, but they've perished. So we may only imagine what actually happened. They're betrayed, yeah. Her third brother drank water from the sewer, but unfortunately water was poison and also did not survive. So from this huge Kutcher family, only Krystyna Budnicka survived. And there is a plan, a map of the shelters of the bankers over there. So Zamenhof 19, you can also orientate yourself. This is where is our museum. What is also interesting, look how close our characters were from each other, but we don't know whether they've met or maybe they saw each other. We don't know, but probably yes, because look, they were just so close. Marylka was close to Sewekonowski. Maybe they saw each other in the ghetto, yes? Maybe they even spoke. But we do not have those information. We may only like project it. And by the end of this exhibit, you can see what's left from the area where was the ghetto. Actually nothing, yes? This photo from the plane, full of white color, just white, which is like a flattened area. So I will point you, we are exactly here, and if you turn around, you can, because this is a photo from the plane, but at the end of the corridor, you can see the photo with these buildings, so Zamenhof 19. So that's the narration, that's our exhibit. Finally, you can hear the voices of the civilians and learn about their perspective and also emotions.
Kasia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For this guidance. This was very important. Thank you.
Thank you and see you soon.
Yes.
Hear you soon, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Musikken, vi lyttede til, stammer fra værket Ghettojydens bøn, komponeret af Sebastian Kondratovich til tekster af Reva Kwiatkowska i anledning af 70. 20. årsdag for likvidering af Litzmannstadt Ghetto i 1944. Det musikalske værk blev fremført af de fire kulturs kvartet, sammen med Lodz Filharmoniens Kammerorkester og Kor under ledelse af Daniel Reiskin. Og hermed vil jeg, Alexander Michtaslav, takke af for i aften, ønske alle en fortsat god aften og på genhør på Radio Shalom.